NASA Administrator Jared Isaacman's warning that the margin between U.S. and Chinese crewed moon landings may be only months apart is a significant escalation in the public rhetoric around the space race. To understand the weight of this statement, Isaacman is not a career government official inclined toward dramatic proclamations. He's a commercial spaceflight veteran who founded Shift 4 Payments and funded his own orbital mission. When he says the gap might be months, he's presumably drawing on intelligence assessments as well as the public record of China's Artemis analog program.
China's lunar program, the Chang'e series and the Long March heavy launch vehicles, has been advancing on a schedule that some Western analysts initially underestimated. China's test of a ballistic missile from a submarine in the South Pacific over the weekend is a reminder that its military space and strategic capabilities are advancing in parallel. A Chinese crewed lunar landing before the U.S. would be a symbolic achievement with real political consequences. In terms of international prestige, science diplomacy, and the race to establish presence near the lunar South Pole, where water ice deposits make long-term lunar habitation more feasible.
The Euclid Telescope's discovery of the oldest quasars ever observed is a reminder that space exploration has scientific returns beyond geopolitics. Quasars are extraordinarily luminous galactic cores powered by supermassive black holes, and observing them at the earliest epochs of the universe gives cosmologists direct evidence about how the first massive structures formed in the wake of the Big Bang. Euclid is a European Space Agency mission designed specifically to map the large-scale structure of the universe. The fact that it's discovering quasars at record distances suggests its survey capabilities are exceeding pre-launch performance estimates.
NASA marking America's 250th birthday with Hubble and Chandra deep space images, patriotic red, white, and blue portraits of nebulae, star clusters, and galaxies, is a lovely piece of public science communication. The imagery is genuinely striking, and it serves a function that pure research images sometimes don't. It reminds a broad audience that the universe contains structures of breathtaking beauty that human civilization has only recently developed the instruments to observe.
The climate and extreme weather stories from the holiday weekend are deeply concerning. A heat wave killed at least 25 people across the eastern United States over the 4th of July weekend. Severe storms and flash flooding are extending into the new week. Colorado has 4 active wildfires, burning more than 160,000 acres combined, with mandatory evacuations near Leadville for the Willow Fire. Governor Newsom has deployed California firefighting resources to Colorado, a form of interstate mutual aid that has become routine as fire seasons have expanded in scope and duration.
The electric school bus story that emerged from the heat wave is one of those quietly significant developments that deserves more attention. During peak demand periods, when the heat wave was straining grid capacity, electric school buses parked for the summer were feeding power back into local grids through vehicle-to-grid technology. This is the practical realization of an idea that energy researchers have advocated for years. Large fleets of EVs as distributed grid storage. School buses are ideal for this because they sit idle for most of the summer, precisely when air conditioning demand peaks. This is real, working infrastructure, not a concept paper.
The photographer's 13-year wildfire documentation project, Gaining Urgency, is a human story embedded in the climate data. Visual evidence of how California and the broader American West have transformed over 13 years of escalating fire seasons does something that statistics alone cannot. It makes the change visceral and emotionally legible to audiences who might tune out tables and charts. That kind of longitudinal visual documentation is genuinely valuable as a historical record.
The multilingual brain aging study presented at a neuroscience forum found that each additional language a person speaks is linked to measurable slower brain aging, with multilingual brains appearing up to 13 years younger than monolingual ones on relevant neural markers. The proposed mechanism involves cognitive reserve, the brain's resilience to damage, which multilingualism appears to build through the constant exercise of maintaining and switching between distinct linguistic systems. It's not just about vocabulary or grammar. Speaking multiple languages appears to recruit executive function networks in ways that keep them robust longer.
I find that finding genuinely surprising. 13 years is not a marginal effect. It's a substantial difference. The confounders are worth acknowledging. Multilingualism correlates with education, socioeconomic status, and other factors that also affect brain aging. But the researchers apparently controlled for several of these, and the association held. If this holds up to replication, it has real implications for education policy and for how societies think about language instruction as a public health investment.